Hey, this is Hal Sparks. You know me from I Love the 80s, VH1,
Talk Soup, Lab Rats, Queers Folk,
and that's Richard Hunter.
We're both musicians, we're both comedians, and we both have the same favorite member of KISS.
Welcome to the Double Neck Podcast.
Is that what we're calling it?
We're talking about some of the greatest music ever made with a lot of the people who made it.
I love the 80s, I love the 90s, I love the 70s.
We're two hosts with 10 strings between us.
You're listening to the Double Neck Podcast.
Yes, we are.
Yes, we are. I'll let you start because you're the pro.
Absolutely. Well, that's using the term loosely, but welcome to the Double Neck Download, everyone. Hal Sparks and myself, Richard Hunter, talking the world of hard rock and all that that implies. DoubleNeckDownload.com, the website to get the podcast available on iTunes and everywhere you podcast, and then our social media links are up there as well. That's everything you know in order to get in on the conversation.
That's right. We've solved it or whatever. Yeah. And this week's episode brought to you by us not going to the KISS cruise, sadly enough.
Sadly. Yeah, very sadly.
We're not part of that. We didn't get to go.
It always makes me sad every year about this time when I see the Bon Voyage pictures.
It's very sad. Yeah. We're going to do it. We will do it at some point.
Especially with Gene announcing this week that the KISS End of the Road tour could last another 2 years.
The Kidney Stones added an extra 9 months of shows.
Yeah.
Whatever. He feels freer and younger. It's kind of like Bernie Sanders heart stints. He's got all the energy he needs. He didn't know what was dragging him down all these years. Turns out it was demon-sized kidney stones or whatever. And you know there's a fan out there. There's like, get the Gene Simmons kidney stone person to person, like he'll show you his kidney stones and talk you through
them. The kidney stone experience.
Yes, right. Yeah. It's part of the vault now. You can get for an extra
upgrade.
The $50,000 vault has one of his kidney stones in it. It's not a whole one because he had to chop them up into multiple ones, you know, make them last. They were not indeed passed through his penis though, so they are not worth as much as the other ones that were salvaged by a fan out of the bilge pump of the tour bus in 1975, which are on display at the KISS Museum in Auckland, New Zealand. They needed to put it there because they needed a space that they could create security from far enough away to guarantee the safety of the very special things that are in there, you know, including Ace's short haircut from the Elder Tour right out of rehab and and two of Gene's wigs. And so there we go. from when he was doing movies and yet still touring. So which, by the way, side note on that, to make up for the fact that I didn't go, we went to KISS mini golf last night. I took my patrons from my radio show. I have a Patreon. So I took some of them to the KISS mini golf as a hangout outing.
Yeah.
And it is one of those things where none of them are obviously KISS fans like me. So I gave them the weird little KISS tour. Like, this is me nerding out in front of, like, this is the Door to the Elder. This is Eric Carr. So this is when Eric Carr joined the band and went, you know, he died on the same day as Freddie Mercury and all the stories. And, you know, and Vinny being the only trans member of KISS, which is true, I guess now, technically. Anyways, great time in general. And I got them to, you can request any song.
Yeah.
So I, the first one I always play when I go is Exciter off of Lick It Up, which is one of my favorite Pocket songs. And the other one is, I had them play The Oath and Under the Rose because I was very inspired by The Door being there. Mm-hmm. And Who Wants to Be Lonely, which is one of my, like,
Who Wants to Be Lonely Tonight?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. Just, I had a crush on the girl in the black bikini and the collar in the video for the longest time. Like, it was brutal.
That was a, I believe, a Desmond Child co-write.
Jean Bouvier, depending on how you want to pronounce his name. He co-wrote that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Desmond Child didn't have any part of that?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. He was the bass player in the Plasmatics, wrote Feel the Heat for the Cobra soundtrack, and I highly recommend his solo record, Drums Along the Mohawk, which is great. A little more like kind of rock R&B-ish, but you can definitely feel the sway that's in Who Wants to Be Lonely in the writing there. And also, my theory is that for Jean's first music video, he took Paul Stanley dancing lessons. Because if you look at the Feel the Heat video. That's your assignment, listeners, for next time. Watch the Feel the Heat video, and you will undoubtedly see the Paul Stanley influence.
Okay.
In that.
All right.
I'll show that. I'm going to show that to Richard right after, yeah. And I'll be damned if I'm not dead on. You'll see exactly what I mean. It's this toss back, hip shuffle foot thing that Paul did for the longest time, especially when not in his boots anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, all right. So I made up for not going on the Chris Cruise by
clearly
going to Kiss Mini Golf here in Las Vegas, which I highly recommend. If you're,
I hope, you know, a little inside baseball on the Kiss Mini Golf there at the Rio.
Yeah,
here in Vegas,
they're knocking it down, right? The Rio.
I guess it's going to be torn down. I just hope Kiss Mini Golf is going somewhere else.
Yeah.
I don't know what the word is.
It'll be its third location. It does really well, considering. I mean, there's tons of stuff when you go through these casinos where you're like, there's just nobody in there.
Yeah.
And every time I go, there's at least 15 people currently playing. And it's not a big space.
What I love about it is, well, first of all, it's better than its first location, I think.
All right.
Also, somebody got a hold of the staff and kind of smartened them up as far as, like, educated them a bit on the history of Kiss. And then I also love that, and this is clearly Gene's influence, that it's about two-thirds Kiss Mini Golf, but the other third is like a Kiss outlet
store. It's Kiss Mart.
Yeah, Kiss Mart.
Yeah, no question. And it's a lot of Gene stuff.
Yeah.
Like, it's the band, and then there's a whole section of the Gene Simmons band shirts and whatnot, and then the Gene Simmons vault is right there and the explanation of getting that. And then you can get picks from almost every era, individually or in packs. They sell air guitar strings, which is a empty plastic, envelope with a label on it. It's just, I mean, is the most Gene thing in the whole thing. But in general, it is definitely a store. They have a lot of the comics. They've got some of the more rare, dolls.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, like the reissues and some variants on them. And then they have a little Kiss museum of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's like their own little, it's like every piece you would have in all the Hard Rock cafes across the country, all jammed into three holding glass cases from IKEA. They're very small, and they're on top of each other. So there's like the little Kiss remote control van and 10 Kiss belt buckles from 1976.
Yeah.
And like all this stuff just kind of in a heap.
The biggest piece is they have the car,
Eric Carr's car.
The band gave Eric Carr when he joined the band. It's a Porsche.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a lot to look at now, but if you imagine the time and brand new condition and everything, that was probably a pretty cool gift to get for joining a band. I never got a car when I joined a band from other people who are already in it.
No. And there's definitely a, there's a dent in the hood. And I don't know if that's from fans sitting on it while I was sitting there getting a picture taken, which, you know, if, size-wise, some of the fans, that would make sense. Or if Ace borrowed it and ran somebody over. Mm-hmm. We don't know for sure.
Yeah, it's still being sought out in a hit-and-run.
That's right. That's right.
79. Yeah. 80.
I don't know. It's parked in that car. Right?
Well, I just hope it. If that place is going to get torn down, I hope they relocate. You know, I've also noticed that there is a club there that has a music venue that has been trying to launch and get itself established.
Yeah.
And recently what they've gone to, it appears, is just booking a Kiss tribute band like five nights a week. There seems to be the same. There's basically a Kiss tribute band in residency there, which is pretty smart because it's right upstairs above
Kiss
Mini Golf.
When you walk, when you come down the escalator to go to Kiss Mini Golf, you can see that venue right up there. So if they had signs just up there, you'd be like, let's do this. Mm-hmm. Let's do both. Like it's becoming, and by the way, I'm just saying, feeds into my theory that the end of the road is the beginning of the residencies.
Yeah.
It's the Kiss beginning of the residencies tour. And they're going to lock in here, and then wherever they are, it's going to be Kiss with some Cirque performers doing Kiss Cirque show, but they're live performing. This is my Gene. Mm-hmm. Listen to me. Mm-hmm. Kiss performs live. They do their version of Love or the Michael Jackson one, that kind of thing. But with the live actual band.
Yes.
And the Cirque show. I mean, honestly, like that would be a pilgrimage.
That sounds fantastic.
Every Kiss fan in the world would come at least 10 times.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're done. especially for seat. Ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. And it beats out the other Cirques because there are other bands either where the members have passed or they don't perform anymore. So they were doing the Elvis and the Michael Jackson stuff. And I was like, I don't understand why they don't pair up with Cher and some of these other people who have these histories. Mm-hmm. And then they've got, instead of videos playing between songs and costume changes, they've got performers doing stuff. Like, literally, Kiss could do a retrospective of their outfits.
Yeah.
You know, they could literally change. They could come out in their 1973 demo outfits and go all the way to a modern one and change a couple of times. And then they could do magic tricks where it's really Cirque performers in their outfits stepping off in another version of them, and they just disappear. Mm-hmm. And then Kiss appears in another outfit in the back of the crowd and that kind of stuff. Like, it'd be mm-hmm. wicked. It'd be
they
so
could do
cool.
a magic trick where at some point Bruce Kulick comes out and
right.
he's playing, and then he just evaporates.
That's right.
In
yeah.
front of the crowd.
That's right. That's right. He's Ace comes out and, you know, it's the actual Ace and waves at everybody, and then he turns into Tommy Thayer.
Yeah.
Instantly. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So but having these folks with me brought me to what our topic for this
yes.
time will be, because as fans of hard rock, you and I went and saw UFO together.
Mm-hmm.
And you're a much deeper UFO fan than I am.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting watching the crowd there, which is a good mix. We ran into a dude who plays in Nerdhalen with me. He's our fill-in bass player in Nerdhalen. And he brought his son to see this UFO show, right? And as these, like, be it hipsters or whomever, as people start getting a good idea of, like, oh, this is a classic band I could dig into, you end up sort of binge listening
yeah.
to bands in... You know, in terms of, you know, in the same way that you do a TV show, if you're catching up, like all your friends watch Game of Thrones, but you come in somewhere in season 6 and you're like, all right, where do I start?
Mm-hmm.
Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And your friends have to give you a rundown of where to start, you know, just breaking down where you're going to begin with. Mm-hmm. And as I was going through the Kiss mini golf, I'm pulling songs, you know, they'll play anything. So I'm, like, you know, doing everything from, like I said, Exciter to, like, modern-day Delilah to The Elder to stuff off of Unmasked and stuff. But it's not exactly what I would, if somebody was like, hey, why are you a Kiss fan? What would you listen to? And so there are a bunch of bands like that where do you start? Like, with UFO, for example, like, you know, if you were telling somebody who was new to UFO... where to start listening, or, you know, and go, okay, these are the things you'll probably catch. They'll catch your ear. You'll know these songs. And then these other songs are the next level, right?
Yeah. It would be, you know, probably their live album.
Right.
It came out, oh, I guess it was around like the late, maybe 77, 78, something like that. It was called Strangers right. in the Night. Because one, okay. it's a great live album recorded in Chicago.
Right.
But also... their first few albums that had their most recognizable tracks on it, like Rock Bottom and Dr. Doctor
right.
and some of those, were already out. So you're mm-hmm. getting all of that. It's like, it's sort of like a greatest hits album, except that
yeah.
not quite, because there's what was new tracks at the time on it.
Right.
That's probably a good overall representation right there.
Right. Okay.
And for that matter, just quickly to follow up on Kiss, I think I might do the same thing there.
Double
maybe
platinum?
Like with Kiss.
Or,
I maybe, or Kiss Alive 2, maybe,
yeah.
just because. And that might have something to do, too, with where I jumped in. I think that was probably, I think
yeah.
Kiss Alive 2 was the contemporary album when I became a Kiss fan.
Yeah, age-wise, yeah.
My first one was actually, my first album that I owned was actually Hotter Than Hell,
mm-hmm.
but I remember going back to Kiss Alive 2 over and over and over
right.
again and realizing, oh, this is a highlight reel of these all these albums that are out up to this point.
That's right, yeah. And it had that extra album on it.
The fourth side.
Yeah, exactly, of studio stuff that would give you kind of an introduction to those. And like, for me,
your
like...
your introduction to Bob Kulick.
That's right, as a fill-in guitar player. But like, All American Man and Larger Than Life were like, and Rocket Ride,
yeah.
those are all stick-out songs that still last. And, you know, sometimes when a band does like a Three Sides Live kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
and then one extra thing. The studio stuff is like, well, we were kind of working on an album, but we didn't have it together, and it was going to be, you know, half crap. So let's just use the good songs and we'll tack, you know, them on. And in this case, that, I guess that methodology worked in terms of Kiss in that regard. So, and the solo on Shock Me on Alive 2 is just awesome. Like, it is just something worth enjoying, you know, and like, to this day, like, there are parts of it that sonically just still resonate so powerfully, you know, listening to it. So
that's actually, I use that as the example of why Ace.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times you will find this fundamental argument a lot of times with bands where, let's say, they replace an original member with somebody else who is universally recognized as maybe more technically proficient. Sure. And you can do that because when you got the band together, you weren't famous. So it had to be four guys answering an ad in a newspaper.
Right.
And now once you're world famous, you got a line around the block of every great player trying to get in on the gig.
That's right.
So that's what happened when Ace was replaced. However, if I always point to that solo because I put it this way. I go, look, I was a 7-year-old kid who hadn't started playing guitar yet, and I could hum that solo.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what more can you say about the ability to stick in someone's head?
That's right.
You know, somebody who's just going to shred their fingers off, that it's going to be cool to listen to, but if I say, okay, you've heard it 3 times, now hum it back to me, you're not going to be able to.
Well, you can argue that Eruption was the fast version of that ability. Yeah. Like, you could still do that. You can kind of, you know, go through the melody of that in your head.
Yeah.
for me, his, you know, obviously his digging into how he played and the depth of what he was doing also had a huge impact on a lot of players. No question. I mean, and it's always easier to replace your original guitar player with someone who's more technically proficient because they can reverse engineer the guitar solos better. Mm-hmm. You know, they can pull it off because they can pull off stuff that's more complicated is the theory.
Yeah.
They may not have the soul of it, but when you're playing live out with them or you're crafting something in the studio, you can make up for that. In theory, it doesn't always happen. But in the idea is that you can't get somebody below it. I think that was one of the problems that I think Queensryche had with one of their replacement guitar players after Chris DeGarmo left, was they picked a buddy from Seattle and they were kind of like, let's down-res a little bit. Let's get more of a Seattle feel. Let's not try so hard to be all metal and kind of Iron Maiden-ish in what we're doing or Metallica-ish in the complexity. Let's just fall back into the soul of it, which is a mistake for a band like that for me. And that goes to, like, you know, when you're a Queensryche fan, like, they're, you know, and you're discovering the new band with the new singer filling in for, you know, replacing Jeff Tate, and he sounds exactly like old Jeff Tate. And you're like, okay, well, if you like this, then you got to listen to Rage for Order. And Operation Mindcrime would be the entry point, either before or after that, depending on how keen they are to listen to an entire album front to back, because it is it's a concept album. It's a rock opera.
And maybe
throw somebody into the deep end.
For the sake of the conversation, greatest hits packages and live albums might be a little bit of a cop out. If we're trying to look at the actual catalog of where to start, then I get that. I mean, if I were just to do over on my answer then, I mean, if I were to say, I mean, with Kiss, I'd probably Destroyer. You got to start with Destroyer.
It's the most sonically pleasing one that still has the early Kiss energy to it, and and there's a bunch of those songs in there that they still play live and that are anthems to it. I agree. I mean, I would go I love the Sans Makeup era quite a bit as well too. So I would go, you know, Destroyer, Creatures of the Night, as a phase over into that. And then, depending on whether they were a harder fan or a softer fan, whether they liked ballads or the other thing, I would either go Revenge or Crazy Nights.
That's tough because I guess, for the sake of the conversation, when I think about it, I'm thinking, okay, well, the album has to have, if we're talking about, I'm just going to give them one or two albums to listen to, then those albums have to have one or two hits mm-hmm. on them, because otherwise you're going to miss out on the entire hits version of the catalog. Mm-hmm. But that being said, stylistically, you also want it to be a pretty good representation of the era. So yeah, and Kiss for sure.
Well, and this gets into also the gnarly aspect of being a fan and trying to introduce somebody to a band, because that's always going to happen. Because the minute you ask, it's like the paralysis I go to when they ask me my favorite songs at the Kiss mini golf.
Oh yeah,
I'm like, what would you like to hear? I'm like, Everybody else who barely knows them comes in to play Rock and Roll Night, and then they're done. Or Beth. Somebody literally had they played. For a birthday, somebody was there or whatever, and I think it was like their girlfriend played Forever for them, mm-hmm. you know, for the whatever, which is very sweet. But I was like, I literally had to go, what do I want to hear? I can listen to any of it, you know? Mm-hmm. Like,
I always take the opportunity to give Paul's solo album a little attention.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I met a guy there last time I went, I think, who was working there. And he was a younger guy, so I don't think he had been a fan prior to the job there,
sure.
but he had obviously taken the training very seriously,
mm-hmm.
so he had brushed up on the catalog. I told him that, I believed Paul's to be the greatest of all the four solo albums, and he looked at me and he said, you know, my favorite one is Peter's. And I said, really? And at first I thought maybe he was just being contrarian. But then after I talked to him, I'm like, nope, this guy has picked out Peter's as his favorite solo album. And I thought, boy, Peter, Chris, I hope one day wanders in here and encounters you.
Yes, right. He needs you desperately. You and I are both in agreement about the Paul Stanley album as well. Although we give due notice to Ace.
Sure.
And I do love the Gene a lot. I do. I mean, I like hearing his Beatles influences. I love his leanings towards, you know, just doing When You Wish Upon a Star was a touch of genius.
Mm-hmm.
No genius. Question. It was genius.
Mm-hmm.
How's he not literally trademarked that?
How has he not trademarked
The word genius.
Yeah.
He's waiting.
G-E-N-E, genius.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Y-U-S.
Because I told you so.
Anyways, so, but that again, that gets into the issue. So like Metallica for me, like people would jump straight at, I think, Master of Puppets and the Black mm-hmm. Album. But I think like Master of Puppets is a full record, end to end, bulletproof.
Yes.
The Black Album, I would say for people, they'll, if they know the hit, if they know Enter Sandman or Nothing Else Matters, they're going to wander into of Wolf and Man and get lost and kind of not key to those songs.
Yeah.
So there was some definite, like, that was the closest thing to a modern, like, time to release a record, three hits, the rest of it is filler as far as the rest of the crowd. Now, I'm a huge fan of Hardwired, mm-hmm. the new, you know, mm-hmm. the newest one.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, if you like, you know, if you're listening, you're hearing them about, and you're like, somebody's like, yeah, I heard Enter Sandman, I really like it. I'm like, okay, I don't know where to drag you.
Mm-hmm. Well, for me, it would definitely be Master of Puppets.
Yep. Although Ride the Lightning, I love.
The first album. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
The problem for me becomes, do you want to know why everybody loves Metallica, or do you want to know why I love them?
That's
right?
A great point.
You see what I'm saying? So if you're asking why it's me, I'm going to say we're starting with Master of Puppets and then Ride the Lightning.
Yes.
And you're actually going to go back one.
That's right.
We'll get to Enter Sandman.
I'm almost operating like an appendix.
Well, yeah, because if you think about it, do you want to... We lived it real time.
Yeah.
So if you're trying to show these people the evolution of the band, if you were to show them Master of Puppets and then the Black Album, if that's all they had to go on,
right.
Would they think, oh, the band was more like Master of Puppets? Or would they go, oh, well, that must have been a one-off because they're more like this. They're more like the Black Album.
Right. Well, that's the problem like hair bands had when they had big, acoustic singles or something. Like,
yes.
Mr.
Big.
Yeah, and Extreme.
Yep.
You know,
oh, yeah, that's a better example.
You know,
yep.
I think, and that almost gets you into how do you introduce people to hair metal as an idea? Like when you're like, oh, you got to hear these songs that aren't necessarily the hit points.
Yeah.
You know, like don't, you know, because you're going to think it's Cherry Pie and 17 and a couple other songs, and then you're going to kind of blow off the rest of it. And like, no, you got to listen to like the first Skid Row record to get the depth of what it was, what was capable in those
mm-hmm.
songs.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, like Rat Out of the Cellar and, you know, Cinderella's like night songs. Mm-hmm. There was some stuff like where that it's almost like an assignment. Like if you want to get into like 80s metal, there are some albums you need to like, absorb to just to get the idea out of your head that everybody sounded the same. Cause mm-hmm. they didn't. That was mm-hmm. one of the things I liked about the 80s era, especially of hard rock and heavy metal. Was there was a lot of vocal variety, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. Stephen Piercy did not sound like Tom Kiefer. Tom Kiefer did not sound like Winger. Winger did not sound like Mike Tramp.
Mm-hmm. Vince Neil didn't sound like any of those guys.
Right.
Yeah.
And there were definitely some copycats, and there were definitely people who had influences. Like I would argue that Janie Lane was trying to sound like Brad Delp and did a fairly decent job of it most of the time.
Mm-hmm. But that's out of genre,
right?
I mean, that's not
peer
to peer.
Well, really. And if you listen to how many people wanted to sound like Sam Cooke mm-hmm. or what have you in the 70s, there was a lot of overlap of mm-hmm. who sounded alike and whatever. And the standouts ended up being like to some degree like Mick Jagger and like that's why we like bands like they had like Gene and Paul sounded so different from each other, and they had four singers in that band. I mean, that was the great thing about Kiss. We always comes back. Yeah. But individually, all you know, that variety, that would be what I would introduce people to in that style or whatever. That's the deep dive in that whole genre. Now, there's an ongoing debate about Iron Maiden, for example. Like the Trooper seems to be the lock in for them as well, you know. And I'm one of those fans who came in late, kind of like you did with Kiss and Alive, too, mm-hmm. in that I love Somewhere in Time, mm-hmm. largely because I'm a huge Blade Runner fan, and there's tons of references to Blade Runner on that album.
Mm-hmm.
And it really caught me, and I love Wasted Years. I mean, it's just a great record. It's like Judas Priest, you know, listeners who are like, yeah, love Turbo or whatever. And people are like, what the hell is wrong with you? You know, but at the same time, like that was my landing point because I was 14 or what? Yeah, 14 when that album came mm-hmm. out. And that was right when I was like getting into the edgier aspects of metal. And I had missed sonically those albums because I didn't have, you know, there weren't radio stations that played a lot of that stuff. And MTV was just really starting to give metal its heyday about then. So a bunch of people get that introduction at that point, and you're like, you know, it's like being a Kiss fan and loving Unmasked the way I do. Mm-hmm. You know, like if somebody landed on Unmasked because of the timing when they came in, like, oh yeah, this is the album that I became a huge Kiss fan when I was 9 because that was, it had cartoons on the front of it, you know?
Yeah. Very first track you're going to hear is Shandy. That's going to be your Kiss introduction.
Yeah. Or Is That You, which is a great friggin' song, period, end of story. So anyways,
Shandy the first song on side two? It wasn't the first song on that
album. I think it was third. I want to say it was third on the, because it was the ballad position.
Yep.
It was Is That You opened it up.
Position.
Yeah, but good. I think, I want to, and I love Naked City off that.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of those I wish they would do more on tour too. I hope all you bastards on the cruise are getting to hear Naked City.
You mentioned Iron Maiden for a second.
Yeah.
Because I just had a thought there. Yeah, that's a similar situation for me because you're talking about a band who, with Paul Di'Anno, those songs, the Paul Di'Anno songs, actually, because of where I came in on Maiden, at first for me were Bruce Dickinson songs because I heard him sing them live.
Right, right.
And I had the live record and I heard him sing those. So I actually had to reverse engineer that to mm-hmm. go back and go, oh, there's a whole other guy. Because that's unusual. Right. It's very unusual. It would be like coming in on Van Halen, Sammy Hagar era and then going, oh, wait, there's this guy, David Lee Roth.
Right,
you know, there's another guy. Maybe not quite as well known, but still responsible for a number of their hits and then landmark albums. But for me, just because of where I came in, Power Slave was a big record.
Right, yeah.
So I would maybe
That seems to be the two, like,
that's,
you know,
kind of their
one or the other.
That's, to me, kind of their Creatures in the Night album, mm-hmm. if you kind of talk about that transition.
Right, Well, and that brings me to, I guess, the quintessential one, AC/DC. Do you, I mean, because you can argue that, and people have retroactively, I think, you know, to get their own cred, somehow patted themselves on the back for being Bon Scott fans after the fact. You know what I mean? They tend to talk a lot of shit, but they, I mean, there's nothing wrong with either version of that band, which is a curiosity. That doesn't happen a lot either.
Right.
That's an interesting thing. When they the singers had a general gravelly tone, Brian Johnson being the extreme version of that, obviously, but Bon Scott being the slightly more like kind of bar version, I would guess, of that. But both of them had... it's almost like David Lee Roth to Sammy Hagar to some degree as far as the incarnation of the band sonically, even though the root of it is exactly the same, which is, I would say, argue DLR to Hagar, the band almost changed entirely, shifting in style. And I think that's the influence of both Eddie playing keyboards more and the Music Man guitar as opposed to the the Frankenstein. The neck style and all that, getting the guitar he wanted made, you know, mass produced to some degree, shifted his style and made it a little more predictable and kind of drove him into an area where, because he wasn't fighting the machinery, he then started experimenting outside of that, which is why the drill and those other things added to it. But
you know where I come on AC/DC is, and I am preferable to Bon Scott, not because of tonality, but to me, lyrically, Bon Scott was, to me, he was reminiscent of Chuck Berry. Chuck Berry, to me, is sort of the quintessential rock and roll poet. Simple lyrics, but able to, but eloquent. And to me,
his fetish about scat affected that? Poetry?
Precisely.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. And
just want to clarify. I agree.
So to me, I enjoyed both eras as well. In fact, I never saw them with Bon Scott. By the time I knew Bon Scott, he was dead.
Dead. Right.
I've seen AC/DC with Brian Johnson many, many times. Mm-hmm. Nothing wrong with that at all.
Yeah.
But I will say that I was always partial to the Bon Scott, the lyricist. That being said, When I sort of rank my top AC/DC songs, you know where I would tell you to go if I was just going to give you one record to get started? Let There Be Rock.
All right.
It's got a couple of my favorite. Let There Be Rock is one of my favorite tracks. Also, Whole Lotta Rosie is one of my other favorite AC/DC tracks. I know sometimes with AC/DC albums it would get a little, like there'd be a live cut here and a, you know, like Dirty Deeds, where there's some stuff. It's an album, but there's also some stuff we didn't put
like
on the last
Cheech and Chong record, right? Where they just kind of vignettes.
Yeah, but I think I would probably start there.
Yeah.
And then maybe Highway to Hell.
Yeah.
You know, we've got a couple of things we have to get to with AC/DC before I even think about.
That's almost
Back
like
in Black.
Right. Well, that's the but I would go. Most people would know Back in Black, so you could kind of just go. Well, you know, obviously the album Back in Black. You know, you know those songs. They've been played constantly. If you know any AC/DC that you're aware is AC/DC, because some people might hear Bon Scott era songs.
Yeah.
From that period and not know it's AC/DC? Well,
and I guess
when they're in a rock bar or something like that?
Well, I guess that's the question. Are we talking to someone who just doesn't know AC/DC? Are we talking to somebody who just doesn't ever hear music?
Who landed here from space.
Yeah, right.
David Bowie has fallen to Earth, right? And he doesn't understand. I would assume... I would assume that they know the Back in Black record and just go, okay, you know that. It's kind of like the Black album for Metallica. I would assume you know Enter Sandman. And I'm like, here's why I like them or whatever. And if I was doing that, if for them, I would go, everybody's going to tell you Master Puppets. That's absolutely true. I would say Ride the Lightning and the Garage Days. Because the Garage Days covers that they do give you a picture of their influences and their favorite bands. And that might also seed you into listening to Budgie and some of the other things that got them into it. If you want to get to a real 70s kick, but Crash Course in Brain Surgery, the riff that they put together on that and Bread Fan and those kind of songs, like tied together with the, them finding who they were after jettisoning Dave Mustaine in Ride the Lightning had a purity to it that I really love. And some people will say Kill 'Em All. I think that was a transitional record of him being in and out.
Yeah.
And I feel like they found themselves, and then they got because it did well, they got the money to make their Destroyer, which is effectively what Master of Puppets is.
I don't know if I've ever told you about this or not, but it's just funny you mentioned Kill 'Em All because there are certain indelible memories, you know, where you just remember what, you know, like people who lived through the Kennedy assassination. I know where I was when I heard about it, right?
Sure.
I remember very distinctly hearing Kill 'Em All for the first time. I was in my friend Brent's 1979 Camaro.
Right.
And we were driving off campus for lunch in high school.
Right.
And he put that in his cassette deck and we were listening to it. And I remember having two distinct thoughts because it was so unlike anything I had heard before. It was the first thrash band I'd ever heard.
Right.
I mean, up to that point, everything is Rats and Cinderella and, you know, those types of bands. I heard it and I remember having two thoughts. This is the most unique thing I have ever heard. I totally dig in this. Second thought, no one will ever buy this. This is this is commercially the least successful thing that will ever be attempted.
Right.
And I was proven to be wrong, but remember having that thought.
Kill 'Em All was a retro album for most people. It did not do well comparatively.
Yeah,
it did fine.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, Ride the Lightning was the one that kind of took off and then it, you know, I think KNAC was making bands back then and they locked into it, you know. It's like Tool, you know, like Tool. KNAC made Tool by playing the shit out of Sober.
Yeah.
Sober is the most requested song in the history of KNAC, right? And when they were on the air, 105.5, you know, and they, like, I remember very distinctly listening to audio cassettes off of KNAC after midnight because, you know, my buddy Mike would tape the show. He would be up at night. He would just record the midnight hour of KNAC in Chicago and, you know, wherever he was getting it from. And those songs would often be the hardest stuff. They would, you know, almost play that stuff, you know, at midnight. And that was where you would hear songs from Kill 'Em All and whatnot.
Do you know, speaking of, what did you just mention? You were talking about KNAC.
Oh yeah.
Tool. Yeah. That's okay. So there's another quick aside just because this is not worthy of an entire episode, but just something I saw this week. I don't know if you saw this or not, but, Eddie Van Halen went to see Tool at the Staples Center, I think, last week.
Oh.
And it was making news because nobody knows where Eddie Van Halen's been, and there hadn't been a lot of sightings of him.
Well, and he'd been battling throat cancer.
Yes.
That news came out.
Yes.
Caleb, you know, our guitar player, Nerd Halen, follows this very closely. He'd been fighting it mostly last year. The idea is that it's now news because he's going to beat it, or he has been, hopefully. We hope that's the case, so heal well, Eddie.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so he went and saw
Tool, so he goes to see Tool. Now, he goes to see Tool with Wolfgang Van Halen.
Uh-huh.
So it's, you know, father, son, night out, go see a band.
Right.
They're at the Staples Center for the Tool show. Wolfgang, if you follow him on Instagram, I think it's Wolf Van Halen, he posted a picture of this.
Yes.
He's sitting there with Eddie Van Halen. A guy comes up to Eddie Van Halen and says, "Excuse me, sir, will you take a picture of me standing in front of the stage?" So there's a photo. Wolfgang took this picture from basically behind Eddie Van Halen of his dad taking this photo of this guy, you know, in front of the stage. He has no idea who he's handed his camera to. Hey, random person, would you mind taking this photo?
Yeah. Look like you have good hands and you won't drop stuff. look like I have nimble fingers. I'm not worried about you destroying my phone.
Yeah.
Somehow I picked you out of the crowd. That throws me back to a time when I was at a charity event and this fellow wanted a picture with me really bad. He was freaking out that I was there and he handed his camera to his friend to take the picture. That friend was Paris Hilton and she could not be more disgusted at the idea that she literally held the camera up, looked like, ugh, and just clicked, didn't even look while she was pointing, just like, and, I'm like, that was one of my, I will hold that memory the entirety of my life. And that poor dude, like, is walking around going, this picture was taken by Eddie Van Halen. Like, Eddie's not even in it. And thank God Wolfgang took that picture, because that guy has that to reference on social media forever. Because imagine being back in the day, you know, with Kiss walking around without makeup on at some place. And like, bro, get a picture of me and my girl, like, here or whatever. Yeah. We're here to see Kiss. Like, oh, it sounds very interesting.
Anyway, we were, so that's kind of where I come down on Metallica.
Tool, Lateralis.
Oh boy. Tool, you know, Tool's catalog, I'm not as familiar with.
Right.
Tool is a band that has, for me, and I guess at some point, I know, I think all their stuff went finally streaming, so
yes,
you know, maybe this episode is for me after all, if I need to find a place to start with Tool. Not that I'm totally unfamiliar, but it was just one of those bands that always just kind of existed on the outer edges, but yet never went away, and incredibly over those years has built itself a intensely dedicated fan base.
Yeah, well, I just pulled up on my computer pictures of album covers, because in the case of Tool, sometimes you just know because of the cover. Like, there's some, I think Undertow is probably the one that most people know from the album cover. It's this weird spidery looking thing. And this, of course, like this is the one that has Sober on it, and Prison Sex, and they, you know, was the birth of the idea that all Tool songs are about anal, which all comes from that album, whatever. But it's probably, there's, when you go to these, because they don't, I think in a couple of them, they've written the name on there, their original EP and some other stuff. But most of the time, it's just funky art, like Anima, like the album cover, you're like, it's the big white square, you know, when you're going, if you were flipping through the, you know, buying CDs, now it doesn't matter so much because you can go on iTunes and you download them that way. But if you were going through an album and you're like, okay, it's the one, you know, it's like, you know, Led Zeppelin 4 at least had a 4 on it, you know, they had it written somewhere on the back, I think. But it was like, it's just the one with the hillside, the naked kids, you know, like that kind of idea. I would say Anima and Undertow, actually, as you know. Undertow's probably the one, if they've heard some, that they would go, oh, yeah, I know Sober. So you're like, well, you'll like the rest of that record. It's awesome. Then I would move people to Anima and, then I'm telling the whole catalog at that point. But Lateralis, I think, or whatever. I love 10,000 Days. And there's, it's amazing when you, that's one of the newer records. That's just a couple, that was 2006. And there's a couple of songs on there where people start singing it before they start because they know it's coming.
Yeah.
So there's a song called The Pot, which starts just vocals. So if you see them live, if they reference that that song's coming, the whole crowd will start singing, who are you to raise your finger? That whole part, the crowd will just start doing it. It's really kind of amazing. And they'll do it well. They'll do it sonically sort of perfect, you know? That brings me to, the bands where, Boston or bands which only have a couple of things out, you know, because I'll give an example, like totally random, Europe. Most people know Final Countdown and the main record, the Final Countdown that it came off of, and maybe they'll have heard Carrie, and they really need to hear songs like Ninja, which is what happens when English is your third or fourth language and you start writing lyrics.
That's like Scorpions.
Yeah.
That's how Scorpions are. Every time there's so many moments with the Scorpions that I think, these guys are German writing in English. Like in Winds of Change, where he says the magic of the moment on a glory night.
Yes.
What is a glory night?
Yeah, it's a good question.
I don't know what a glory need is.
There's no such thing. Glory need. In the case of Europe, I would recommend people listen to, I think the album's called Secret Society. That was the single off of it too. I'm going to check myself now that I'm in a like internet mood, I pulled up my iPad on here. So I'm cheat sheeting a little bit. But I bought that album. Yeah. I bought that album on a whim. Because I was like, oh, they have a new record out. That's weird. Mm-hmm. This was 2006. Yeah. And Secret Society, Getaway Plan. There's a ton of songs on there. I was like, this is solid. And the guitar player, like, clearly, even back in the day, was a shredder and then ultimately a sort of a Zakk Wylde wannabe later in his life or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's in there. And there's a certain heaviness that's kind of surprising, but the whole record's great. I like it. I mean, and very seldom does a band from the 80s, bring back and do another record and you're like, this is solid. I would argue that this is a little closer to tone what they sounded like live. They were much heavier live. So I recommend that record as somebody like, that's an odd one. Like, okay, you probably heard the Final Countdown. Listen to Secret Society from 2006. It's got good flow. It's strong. Mm-hmm. And it's odd in that situation. It's a good example of not going deep into somebody's catalog. Like, oh, you got to listen to the first record. Like, no, listen to the last one. That's a rarity.
Yeah,
and
that
it's
is
the same singer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's like you got to listen to the new one because you'll like Hagar era Van Halen, and it's 1988, and you're like, oh yeah, listen to this. You'll love
that. Yeah,
that
is
an
anomaly.
You want to hear them? Right. But there's those. Yeah, I'm trying to think of other bands with kind of the deep, track of, like the bands that always boggled my mind were like Skynyrd and those kind of bands where you're like, how do you intro?
Yeah.
It's almost, you land anywhere. It's either good or terrible depending on how you view that kind of music. You know what I mean? You'll either get it or you absolutely won't.
Another tough one to do would be Aerosmith because you're talking about a band who has one whole, They're almost in the Roth Hagar situation without ever having a second lead singer, because when you talk about incarnations of the band, once you get to the mid 80s, you've got this hit machine that you're going to have to show some representation of that. But there was a whole nother life before in the 70s.
My sister was older than me and she listened to Aerosmith and I remember hating it. When I was a kid, like hating Toys in the Attic and all that kind of stuff, just didn't get it. It seemed very run of the mill to me, just toys in the attic. It just seemed like they were working really hard for very little, but obviously, Sweet Emotion and Dream On and those are amazing classics that predate, that's the early part of it. But it seemed like they were, they had like two of those an album and then the rest of it was just like, get it out and tour, Boston touring band kind of style. I fell in love with them at Permanent Vacation and Pump. That was my introduction of like, all right, I like them now. And that might've been a factor of age and timing, or the cleanliness of those records and how just consistent they were, the Janie's Got a Gun era of Aerosmith is a very different experience. And I also do have baggage from them back in the 70s in that they were the bad guys in the Beatles, Sergeant Pepper, Bee Gees movie. They were called the Future Villain Band.
Yeah,
in there.
Yeah,
I love their cover of Come Together, which is another. Mm-hmm. They were a band that was twice revived by covers, one of another band and one of their songs. That literally walked this way being covered by Run DMC, literally salvaged them.
Yeah,
in a lot
that
of ways.
Greatest Hits album, because same thing. I mean, obviously, anybody doesn't know, you and I are basically the same age, so everything is going to hit at right about the same time. Right. And I think the first time I saw Aerosmith live was probably right around Permanent Vacation. Yeah. You know, no, it was Done with Mirrors. That was Done the first one. Yes, right. So, but I think that was the album right before that. Mm-hmm. But
that definitely that era, and they were definitely like that. They were locking into that pocket.
But that Aerosmith Greatest Hits album with the red cover and just the logo, that's the one that was my my Cliff remedial notes. Course. Yes. I mean, that's where I went back and oh, yeah, there's okay, so there's all
and
this
that's
stuff.
That's what they serve up to speed as. That's, to them, that's what a lot of those albums are for.
That like, album, I remember, always had the Nice Price. Do you remember the Nice Price sticker? It would be like, it was like a, not a cutout, but there was, and I don't know if it was just one label that advertised it this way, but they were... They were cheaper albums because they were older albums. So you'd have all your new releases and everything. And then they had the bin, and it always said Nice Price on it. There was a sticker on it that said Nice Price. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like that's what Greatest Hits ultimately served as a purpose. Yeah. And now these, like, they do these curated playlists on iTunes, you know, and they're like deep tracks and next steps and introduction to blah, 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 and all these things. You know, Prince obviously is a huge Prince fan, and you know that he's almost impossible.
Yes, yeah.
Because there's so much variety in what is out. It's like Queen. What Queen record? You know.
Yeah.
Not, you know, to whom? Who are you talking to? Because the albums are going to be shaped very differently in that regard. Those are like it's almost singles at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And then hopefully that they chase the singles down a hole. Cause I like for me, Around the World in a Day would be the Prince album I would introduce people to. Cause they probably heard Let's Go Crazy and Purple Rain and all that kind of stuff. So therefore go into this, and there's some really, it's as weird as he needs to get and as cool as he needs to get.
But again, if they have no idea who Prince is, you might have to give them the Purple Rain soundtrack.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, can you just not have that?
Yeah. I think there's almost like an, of course, category.
Yeah.
That makes sense. You just like, well, this of course.
Yeah.
But this that's the intro conversation you end up having with somebody. Like, well, of course you're gonna listen to Master of Puppets, but of course you're gonna listen to the Black Album, but of course, you know.
Right.
Of course, you're gonna want the smell the glove from Spinal Tap. You're gonna need the soundtrack album. But Christmas with the Devil is worth a listen, you know. So this is our, please let us know, by the way, what your intro band is, what you have the hardest time introing, you know, people like, cause you know, I touched around Priest and the weirdness of, you know, being introduced at Turbo. What would you say is your Priest intro record?
Mm-hmm.
What would you be like
for Priest?
Hellbent for Leather, or? Is that the album or is that the,
covers. The cover, you're going to have, here would be your choice. You have like British Steel.
Yeah.
You'd have, for me, you have Defenders of the Faith. You'd have, it might be British Steel for me.
Yeah. I think that's probably that'll be the one that like, okay, this is, but then, you know, like, how would you do it? Like, how do you make, because back in the day, you used to make mixtapes, too.
Yeah.
You know, you'd put together, like, I'm going to put together a mixtape for you so you understand this band, man.
Yeah, like, Well, people should, they should maybe check in with us on, one, if they disagree with any of the ones we've thrown out, but also there has to be just a ton of bands that we didn't even touch on.
Yeah.
Like, we can always follow up on more with this.
Yeah, what's your intro? Let us know, you know, tweet us at Double Neck Download. Mm-hmm. Is it Double Neck Down?
Double Neck Down on Twitter, Double Neck Download on Instagram.
On Instagram, right. So Double Neck Down on Twitter and Double Neck Download on Instagram. Like, message us on there. Mm-hmm. And tell us like your favorite band and what the intro level album is. And we'll read those next time.
Yeah.
That'll be cool.
Yeah.
Of course my intro albums for Kiss would be, The Elder and Sonic Boom and, Come At Me, Bro. it would be, Paul's solo album, Hotter Than Hell.
Paul's second solo album.
That's right. Yeah. Live to win. Right.
Yeah.
Which was going to be a Kiss name of a Kiss album. And then they ditched it. I think Hot in the Shade It was going to be Who Dares Wins, which was, I think, the SAS motto, which is very British. Who dares win, lad? The U.S. Marines are like, you know, kill them all, let God sort them out, and Kill Them All became an album, you know, from that, whatever. The Brits are, who dares wins,
yeah,
my lad? Yes. Daring is the important, you get what I'm saying? So, yeah, let us know, and thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. Help us raise the queue of hard rock and heavy metal. You know, there aren't a lot of podcasts out there covering this genre, and we love it dearly, and we'd love to hear from you about who we'd like to have on. Now, I got into a Twitter conversation accidentally, on purpose, with this guy Todd Kearns.
Oh, yeah, I know Todd.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know him personally, but I know who he is
and
well.
He's a deep reads dude, and I'll end on this, because I'm going to ask him to be a guest on the show.
He would be a fantastic guest.
Because he plays with Slash, yep. He plays with all, he's become this, like, need this guy on your team kind of player, because he sings like a bird, and he plays like a maniac. He's a great guitar player, but he ends up playing bass for Slash, I think, just so he can have him on vocals backing stuff up, because he can pretty much, you know, sonically knock boots with Miles Kennedy if he needs to, and definitely locks harmonies. But the dude is so talented. And I was introduced, he was in a band called Age of Electric in Canada for a long time. Sort of grunge, but more in the rock zone of things. And then he had a band called Static and Stereo with his brother. And I just moved to Canada, and there's this song called Before My Time. It was on there. They were playing in heavy rotation on Much Music. And I was like, this is awesome. Like, this sounds like classic rock to me. I love this. So I went out immediately, bought the record. The guitar solos on it are dead on Ace Frehley. They even thank, his brother thanks, you know, like the gods at the end of it. And he's starting with Ace Frehley, like for the solos. Because some of them are literal lifts. They're amazing. Like note for note, it's amazing.
Yeah.
But the album is fantastic and taught me a lot about just like pop songwriting or whatnot. But like, he's one of those guys where as soon as I found out, I'm like, I love this band. They only have one record out. Who the hell is this guy? This is terrific. And then to come to find out, he had this entire catalog with Age of Electric that I went back, I had fans, this fan of mine, Sarah, who's fantastic, literally, she's Canadian. She's like, oh yeah, he was in all this stuff, like found all these EPs for me. Like, you got to listen to the Ugly EP, which he first put out with Age of Electric and all this stuff. And the guy's talent is amazing. Mm-hmm. And I'm a huge fan. And then he started messing around with Danko Jones. They were tweeting back and forth. Because they were on a podcast together, and I'm like, these guys need to do an album. And then they started going, yes, and like talking in the thread. And I was like, if I played a part in these two dudes doing an album, oh my God. You know what I mean? Like, you know, put a pin in it. Yeah. And Danko Jones is one of those guys. Like, if you've never listened to Danko Jones, like, people would go, they'll know Lover Call as the one single, maybe. But you can jump into his pool anywhere, because in the AC/DC genre, you know, what you see is what you get, right? Mm-hmm. There's no like, oh, this album's totally different from this. The albums all flow right together. It's not repetitive, but they're all, the style is so locked in.
Yeah.
You'll go, oh yeah, I get this band. And if you like it, you'll like everything else. It's very rare in that, in the Danko Jones. He's one of the standouts. And by the way, if you haven't heard King's X, get Gretchen Goes to Nebraska and listen to that. And then you'll go to, of course, Gretchen Goes to Nebraska, but then you go to Out of the Silent Planet, and then I would say Tapehead and Ear Candy, and then a new album coming out. So we'll get those guys on as well. But I want to get Todd on the show, and I'm going to get Doug on to talk about those things.
Yes.
So we'll
all good ideas.
Yeah, those will be coming up. And, you know, people who have a deep history, and we got to reach out to the UFO guys, because that story about the
Neil
keyboard,
Carter, yeah, the
Neil
keyboard
Carter.
Player. He
dude,
replaced
just,
Paul Raymond.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a huge Vinnie Moore fan. Mind's Eye is incredible. But I will say, like, the story of Neil Carter just kind of, like, rolling into that band, like, he was just teaching music theory to, you know, like, you want to go back on the road with the band? Like, it's a documentary in and of itself.
It is. It's a literal turning back of the clock. Like, if you ever had the thought of, What if a time machine appeared and I could just step into it and be transported back to 20 years ago?
Right.
That's exactly what happened.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. It's so cool. I would love to hear that story. So we're going to try and get him on as well and talk to him about that. I think that's a fantastic idea. So thanks for listening. Or watching, or however you watch this, because we got the video as well up on here, and we will, like I said, we'll be putting this together with guests. I've got a whole system where we can lock them in, we can Skype them in, essentially through these Mimo call things, which are really tight. I'm saying, almost anybody. So if you got guests you suggest, we'd love to hear from them as well. We'll do it.
The world to be before you on your knees, it's just a fantasy alive.